Paper 17, Section 5, which is old single column, page 202. All right, well, maybe just the one thing to say up front. This is a topic that's not often thought about, even by longtime readers. The fact that there's something called the circuit spirits in Havona. So that's what this first section is about. And just basically say that there's a little bit about them here, a little bit more scattered around the book, and it's all teasers and clues, basically. Waiting for someone to put the pieces together. So a lot of the recognition of the greater significance of the circuit spirits in the big picture require just that, a big picture, right? Require you to put together all the details of the pattern universe, like you've heard me say a number of times here. So don't expect to dot every I and cross every T as we go through these, this handful of paragraphs here. But I'll give you a little bit to start thinking about. Let's go.
Paper 5, The Seven Spirits of the Circuits. The seven spirits of the Havona circuits are the joint and personal representation of the infinite spirit and the seven master spirits to the seven circuits of the central universe. They are the servants of the master spirits whose collective offspring they are. The master spirits provide a distinct and diversified administrative individuality in the seven super universes. Though these uniform spirits of Havona circuits are enabled to provide unified, uniform, and coordinated spiritual supervision of the central universe.
Okay, so starting with those little tidbits. Okay, so the first thing, the joint impersonal representation of the infinite spirit and the seven master spirits. Really think of the infinite spirit as being the creative source of bringing the seven circuit spirits into existence. But the thing to note, which they allude to here and stress in other places, this is not the master spirits in any sort of individual fashion, not even the seven individuals in some sort of an association. Okay, when they say collective, whose collective offspring they are, we're talking literal collective. Remember back when in the previous paper, when we read about the seven master spirits, I stressed that there's a very important revelation in there, that there's a super additive, if you're looking at it from the bottom-up point of view, there's a super additive consequence of the relationship between the seven master spirits, an organic super additive consequence, like the Paradise Trinity. Okay, there's an eighth thing. You have the seven personal things, the seven master spirits, but there's an eighth thing, an impersonal fact, like the Paradise Trinity. Does anyone remember the name for that spirit? The sevenfold spirit. Okay. There's this collective fact. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then 8. Okay. And so it's the infinite spirit through the sevenfold spirit, giving rise to the seven circuit spirits. It's one fact, not seven. That's why you can end up with seven that are uniform. See, I told you they're uniform. They're not flavored like the master spirits. Okay? They're uniform because this creative act of the infinite spirit has gone through one lens, okay? One liaison creative lens, that the sevenfold spirit. So that's the first, intriguing thing going on here. It's like, to see that sevenfold spirit not just being some side issue, but it's intimately involved, front and center now, in this act of bringing these circuit spirits into existence. Okay, so there's that. When they say they are the servants of the master's spirits, however, and I mentioned this back when we were doing the seven supreme executives at the beginning of this paper, the seven supreme executives supervise the seven circuit spirits. Okay, the master spirits supervise the reflective mother spirits, but the seven supreme executives are the ones that supervise the seven circuit spirits. And remember, those seven supreme executives were trinitized into existence. So notice how, so you can tell just by everything they're saying here that impersonal and all that, we shouldn't be surprised if you end up with something that's very Trinity coordinated. Remember what they just said there at the end. They're unified, uniform, and coordinated. Okay, even though they're not persons, so obviously we're not going to be able to call them mothers in any sort of immediate way of understanding. They've used the coordinated. Okay, so right up front, they're a part of what we've been talking about. When we're talking about the Supreme Spirits, we're always talking about a phenomenon that's very Trinity associated and is not so cleanly labeled God, not God. We're definitely in that space again here.
Deity.
Yeah, I got deity, but it's very hard to understand, when you should use the God term. When there's a lot of trinitization in play as opposed to existential creators, this is the way it goes. It becomes much more of a deity phenomenon, much more, and then what's the fundamental quality of deity?
Unity.
Yeah, which we understand as divinity, yes. But, it's unity. So it's going to be hard for you to, really think of a lot of these things. Well, here's a really definitive, individuated fact that's personalized, and I'm going to call that God. It's much more of this totality attitude, collective, everything all working together is one amazing orchestra of Trinity-sourced, mother-like phenomena. All right, let's see. Anything else in there? No, let's get into the next thing here. Oh, yeah. Yep.
On definition of servant is a devoted and helpful follower, a tireless servant of God. I think that's a better way to look, because when you think of servant, you think immediately of somebody that's that's.
And the reason you have a problem with that is because you're thinking they're persons. They're not persons. They're like spirit machines from our perspective. And machines are pretty servant-like. If you punch a button on your pad, it does what it's told to do. Okay? So that's you don't want to let that go. That's a very definitive fact. They're telling you right up front. And then they're going to challenge you as you get in deeper. So you got something up front that said is impersonal. And yet, when we get into it, look at what these impersonal facts do. The whole point is to really challenge any simple way of you might think about this. Okay, they have no problem being servants. They're totally cool with that. After all, even the apostles called him master unbidden. And they were persons. All right.
Seven spirits of the circuits are each limited to the permeation of a single Havona circuit. They are not directly concerned with the regimes of the Eternal of Days, the rulers of the individual Havona world, but they are in liaison of the seven supreme executives, and they synchronize with the central universe presence of the supreme being. Their work is wholly confined to Havona.
Okay, so you got that simple fact at the end. Let's think about the other things that are in play here, though. Okay, so as you, like they said, one for each circuit, just for one circuit. They're not directly concerned with the regimes of the eternals of days. Just right in the context there, if they're about the whole circuit, there's a lot of worlds in a circuit. There's a lot of eternals of days. And so they're, in a sense, at a level that's uniform around the circuit as opposed to uniquely different world-to-world around the circuit. Okay. And the other thing, sort of subtext of that you learn in another spot, why it would make sense that they aren't directly concerned with the regimes of the Eternals of Days, they weren't manifest in Havona initially. And the Eternals of Days are just that, the Eternals of Days. They've been there as part of the eternal central universe. But the circuit spirits didn't show their faces until the super universes were established, and they started setting up the super universe circuit around the central universe. Boink, all of a sudden in Havona, these seven spirits are found to be present, one on each circuit. Okay, so that's another reason that you would think that they aren't some very intimate connection to the Eternals of Days. As you remember, there's the whole eternal central universe phenomenon that is no more. It got distinctly changed, and is continuing to change. Everything there changed when Grand Fanda got there. The firstborn creator son did his bestowals there, and that changed everything. So Havona is a phenomenon that's not what it used to be. Don't ever forget that. It has a relationship to the finite and hence to the evolutional. Okay, or the evolutionary. It's part of the evolutionary phenomenon now. It had some sort of from our perspective, changeless past, but Okay, and then notice how they word the, so like I said, the seven supreme executives are their supervisors. And since the circuit spirits aren't persons, they describe that as a liaison. So there's some really tight energy synchronization here between the trinitized supreme executives and these circuit spirits.
They're bringing from the spirits, they're taking it from the circuit, making a circuit for it to get to us, or get to, the infinite spirit and the seven master spirits.
So
it has to have a circuit to get there, and they're kind of like the conduit, or what, not conduit, but the thing that they can go in,
Well, you'll see a little bit, some of their relationship. Now, to us, it's pretty mysterious. I mean, again, you're not going to understand any sort of immediate connection of them to us. Remember, the whole universe is not just about us. But a way that you can understand a bit of a relationship to us is Havona, in the one sense, you can think of it as an absentite domain. And we're out here in a finite domain. So it's a definite step up. Well, that initial step up to the eternal Havona fact, that's going to be a pretty big step for a finite creature to take. Okay? But what if there were some steps provided down from that high starting point of Havona? You can think of the circuit spirits as a first step down. And then what happened when Grand Fanda came is set up a regime there that produced an even further step down, a step that was far enough down that Grand Fanda could, had legs long enough to take that first step. and get in. Okay? So that's, the circuit spirits are part of this downstepping of the original Havona to match up to the seven super universes. Yeah?
Is this something comparable in effect to this sevenfold, or is it part of the sevenfold, or what?
No. Not you know, in any immediate way in relationship to the sevenfold. But, you know, you noticed that they are related to the sevenfold spirit, which is tied to the master spirits, which are part of the sevenfold. So it's not far removed from the sevenfold. Okay. But, you know, you don't think of them as, even in my expanded psychic circles chart, you know, as being in one of those cosmic mother levels. Okay. So they aren't that close to the sevenfold. All right, so, and then the one other thing there is, and they synchronize with the central universe presence of the Supreme Being. Okay, we've talked about this a couple times. Okay, we all know that the Supreme Being is a transcendental being. Supreme Being is nowhere in Havona or in the seven super universes or even on the Isle. Okay? So you're always thinking about some sort of a, you know, a shadow cast down presence of the Supreme Being from the transcendental down into the finite. And this takes different flavors depending on where you are. Out here, you know, we think of a lot of the finite upholder, you know, the universal mother. In there, you want to kind of think of the reciprocal of that, what you call the Supreme Spirit. Remember we mentioned that? To think of the presence in Havona as being the Supreme Spirit. That's what they're referring to. The central universe presence of the Supreme Being is called the Supreme Spirit. So these circuit spirits are synchronized with the Supreme Spirit. Okay, and the Supreme Being is part of the sevenfold, so there's another linkage. And not surprisingly, there's two, because remember how we've always pointed out, you have sort of two sides, two boundaries to the finite domain that we're in. You have the existential boundary, the conjoint actor, the infinite spirit, third source and center. And you have the transcendental boundary, the Supreme Being. Yeah. There's two boundary conditions, and so there's two linkages that you can immediately understand here. Okay?
I'm starting to think that it's unfortunate that in our normal usage, supreme is an adjective. And as we hear all about the supreme this and the supreme that, mm-hmm. It's not being used as an adjective. What is it being used as?
You know, it's just like, you know, saying the absolute or the ultimate. See, all three of those. And notice that you use it directly as an adjective when you say the supreme being. So in other words, to get it to our initial thought of that word, like you're thinking, you have to get a he. But when you're thinking about a she, or, you know, deity, just deity rather than personalized deity, then you say the supreme. So you go, oh, so it's heading towards something. It's an adjective looking for a noun. The supreme. That's part of how you should appreciate that designation. Calling something the supreme is like, well, okay, where's the noun? Yeah, in other words, there's something to come yet. That's not an end in itself. That must be a means to an end. Yeah. And you have the first signs of that end that you would say the supreme spirit. There you're using as an adjective. Yeah, that's not the full supreme being. You know, or the Supreme One, you could also call. But it's the beginnings, because Havona is certainly closer to the transcendental fact of the Supreme Being than out here in the super universes. So not surprising, there might be something in Havona where you're using the word supreme as an adjective already. Just kind of, Let the word kind of just lead you, rather than saying, well, that's in conflict. No, just, they know those words are basically adjectives. However, they're trying to use that, to give you a sense of the evolution that's in play. And not only is there an evolution in play, but especially, as we'll see when we get to the next section, you've got to remember, the more you start talking about mother-like or trinity-like phenomena, the less you have something that you can understand in some really simple, localized sequence. The fiat father can go zap, and there's something there. It's all said and done. But the totality attitude tends to do one thing and have it show up at two different times. There's less of a, less of a localization in time to a lot of these phenomena than we're used to in thinking about the Father's acts, because the Father intervenes from eternity into some point in time. So not surprising, his acts have this localized character. But the facts that are within and embrace the totality of time, see, they're not going to necessarily be so localized in their manifestation temporally. They could be doing, one thing in a sense that we would think of it, and it'll show up, half of it will show up here, and then the other half will show up at a much later time. And coincidentally, the two temporal pieces fit perfectly together, because of course their source is transcendent of that temporal difference. So, that whole bit of evolution is creativity in time. Another way of thinking of God the Mother in relation to God the Father. God the Father can make this fiat creative act, but he hands that act off to the Mother, who then spreads it out over time. Okay. One act, one eternal act, showing up at a whole bunch of temporal points, and coincidentally, all the temporal points fit together into a whole, because of their source. Okay, so you have this very, we're initially thinking is very energy-like, this liaison relationship and this synchronization with the Supreme Spirit, which again is not a person, it's this spirit presence. So all this sort of energy synchronization. Okay, so you got that, and that doesn't seem too odd, because they said right up front they were non-personal. Now look what they say.
These spirits of the circuit make contact with those who sojourn in Havona through their personal offspring, the tertiary supernifum. While the circuit spirits are coexistent with the seven master spirits, their function is the creation of tertiary supernifum did not attain major importance until the first pilgrims of time arrived on the outer circuit of Havona in the days of Grand Fonda.
Okay, a few things in there. First of all, that last part. The seven master spirits make the secondary supernifem, and they didn't start making them until the times of Grand Fonda. And they're saying that the tertiary supernifem that come from the circuit spirits didn't really pick up a lot of steam until that time either. But there were tertiary supernifim prior to Grand Fonda. So between the founding of the super universe level and Grand Fonda's arrival, there were some tertiary supernifim, just at a minor level. Okay, that's all fine and dandy. However, wait a minute. Impersonal spirit presences are creating personal angels. Okay, this is confusing. Okay, so remember how we were talking about the seven supreme executives. We talked beings that were definitely, we should think of as persons, but they didn't seem to really be doing the creator thing. At least, not as definitively as what we see here. Now, yeah, they're involved in the Omnia Fem, but you know, here they're talking about these circuit spirits being, you know, really the creators. Well, they're not persons. Wait a minute, I thought, okay, if you have deity and it's a creator, it's definitely a person, and we can call it God. See how this is not black and white. You have this very unity phenomenon going on, which, especially from just a temporal viewpoint, is not going to be cleanly labeled deity, personalized deity, etc. However, we were just talking about the Supreme Being. Maybe what this is telling us, after all, they did say right up front in the first paragraph, they used the word coordination. Maybe we really do have a mother phenomenon, but it's just not manifested yet as a mother phenomenon in any way that an experiential being can experience. But the fact that there may be some more mother, definitive mother-like, personal-like fact that will show up sometime in the future, maybe that's being foreshadowed by the fact that they're already acting like mothers and making daughters, making angels.
It sounds like they're doing this in and of themselves, not with a complementary.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. See, it sounds a lot more like they're initiating. It's like, well, they aren't persons. They don't have a choice. How could they initiate? But maybe there's, personality that's not yet seen. After all, we do all know, and we know that there's a great example of that with a creative spirit. Starts out impersonal and eventually manifests a personal face. And it is the next section. So you could be suspicious, see, that maybe you've got something, like that on some longer term scale, or maybe, something that doesn't manifest on that in that way until the Absinite Age. Yeah. All right. So allow this, there's a reason why they put these all together. They want you to think about all these different shades of expression together in one paper, seven Supreme Spirit groups. And appreciate how you may be able to play an understanding of one off the other, off another. All right. One other little thing in there. While the circuit spirits are coexistent with the seven master spirits, well, now that's kind of a curious statement, since they tell you, like I said, in another spot in the book, that no one had any clue of their existence until they set up the seven super universes. And the master spirits were there from the beginning. That's why you have seven worlds of the Father, Son, and Spirit. I mean, that's a very eternal fact. So let me see that. Maybe from an existential point of view, maybe they were right there with the master spirits. But the master spirits made their presence manifest very early on, and it wasn't until much later on that the coexistent circuit spirits made their existence experiential. As they very purposely said, coexistent. Again, it's another hint that you've got a phenomenon that's coming down into manifestation from some very high place. How high, we don't know. All right. Now they give you a little bit, Pam, about how we'll experience them.
As you advance from circuit to circuit in Havona, you will learn of the spirits of the circuits, but you will not be able to hold personal communications with them.
Communion.
Even though...
Yeah, personal communion with them. Yeah.
With them. Even though you may especially enjoy and recognize the impersonal presence of their spiritual influence.
Right, so even though you may personally enjoy and recognize the impersonal presence of their spiritual influence, does that make sense? mean, what one of the things we call personality is spirit pattern. Okay, so your personality can definitely grab a hold of, feel spirit energy presence. Okay, so they're telling you, you will, you know, be bathed consciously in their presence, you know, all the way around a circuit, and then you'll go to the next circuit, and you'll have a whole other presence you'll be bathed in all the way around that circuit. You know, if you are experiencing this, you're going to be drawing something from this. What exactly? Well, a first guess might be just thinking about what I said. If they're a step down from sort of the foundational nature of the Havona worlds, they could help you work your way up through the nature. If those things that were started at the times of Grand Fanda get you going on the upward climb, maybe they're helping you continue that upward climb. You know, and you could probably use some help, especially when you got to the second and first circuits of Havona, like we talked about, and the climb goes very steep. If you had someone really helping you, lifting you, helping to lift you up from the supreme up through the absolute, the ultimate, the co-absolute, and up to the absolute, then you're going to need all the help you can get. So that's a suspicion that you would have, that they're probably, you know, that your interaction with them is fostering your growth in that steep upward climb.
That picture is like an updraft.
Mm-hmm.
But a circuit has to.
Well, again, remember, they're not necessarily, you know, the Havona circuits are the circuits.
Okay.
They're a spirit presence around a circuit. They're not the circuit themselves. You know, that's, I mean, they're called the seven spirits of the circuits.
Okay.
Right? They're seven spirits. We call them circuit spirits for short. And, you know, this interaction, you know, maybe not, you may not want to think of it as being encircuited in them, but you're at least, you know, interacting. There's going to be some super additive consequence of the relationship between you and the engagement of that presence. It's going to do something to you. If they did nothing to you, you wouldn't know of their existence. The fact that you know, they're telling you that you'll know of their existence, means there's going to be a super additive consequence. There's a real connection there. You know them, hence they're interacting with you. Something's going to happen. All right. So that's a little tease there. And then here's the really big tease in the last paragraph.
The circuit spirits are related to the native inhabitants of Havona, much as the thought adjusters are related to mortal creatures inhabiting the world of the evolutionary universes. Like the thought adjusters, the circuit spirits are impersonal, and they consort with the perfect minds of Havona being much as the impersonal spirits of the Universal Father indwell with the finite minds of mortal men. But the spirits of the circuits never become a permanent part of Havona personalities.
Okay. Yeah, so you want to talk about some sort of a super additive consequence. You're saying, yeah, you're going to experience something, but the Havona natives are being engaged by these circuit spirits in a way that's analogous to a thought adjuster engaging us. Well, when the thought adjuster engages us, there's a super additive consequence. What's it called? The soul. Okay? See, so they're saying that the interaction between a Havona native and these circuit spirits is some sort of a definitive fact, like our soul is definitive. What's that about? That's one of the things that you can discover as you unpack all the details of the pattern universe. Exactly what's that what's going on there, and how that how is that related to all the other things like that in the universe of universes? That's a huge clue there. So you know, and another thing, it's like, well, we know why it's very important that the thought adjuster is not a person, because we don't want to be have some being taking possession of us. Yeah. We're the person. You know, notice that coincidentally, you here you've got an impersonal spirit. It's not going to take possession of a Havona native. They're the personality. Well, it's a nice coincidence that they haven't manifested definitively personally, at least at the level where there's Havona natives. See how this all works together is this fascinating system of evolving personal, impersonal, you know, expressions. Okay.
Wait a second, I lost my page.
So maybe there's like a fusion type thing that happens that will affect the outer space levels eventually?
No. See, but the spirits of the circuits never become a permanent part of the Havana personalities. There's no fusion going on.
That was the
sentence I didn't hear. Right? See, so, you know, and again, it's not an individuated spirit like the adjuster is. You know, it's ubiquitous all the way around the circuit. Okay, but the whole point is to get you thinking. It's like, okay, so what's the clue there? What are they trying to, you know, suggest to me?
Well, it appears to me that, I mean, we always consider everything how it affects us. Mm-hmm. This appears to me to relate far more to the next step beyond like life, mm-hmm. and when everything is settled, when the grand universe is really settled.
Well, I mean, you know, like they said up front, their work is wholly confined to Havona. Okay, so they don't have anything at all to do with us out here in any direct way. Okay, so if you're looking for, you know, some transformation of your life because now, you know, out here, no. Okay, but you're definitely going to benefit from them in the central universe. The Havona natives are apparently benefiting even more from their existence. And like I'm suggesting, we benefit from their existence indirectly in that they're part of a system. Parts of that system engage us directly. And if you take any element like the circuit spirits out of that system, the whole system collapses, including the part that directly engages us. Okay. So they're a key component in the puzzle. Part of which overlays us.
Well, and then also, too, in addition, they're just more of a, it broadens our conception of God so that we can be comforted by, you know, in our future, you know, as we start to see more and more of our future, we can be comforted in the here and now with our conception of deity. It's just, you know,
so rich and so...
Yeah, it's rich. Right. It's rich. And it can come to bear on more and more moments of individual life and transform.
You know? Yeah, right. It should, you know, all these different expressions should teach you that there aren't any cracks out here. I mean, you are touched in ways that humans have never imagined, okay? When humans think they're alone, no one knows that they're alive. Okay, I mean, the Urantia book is trying to teach us, I mean, you couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, as if the Father wasn't enough, but I mean, there are so many things you've never even imagined that are intimately benefiting from. You know, remember, there's not one iota of you that upholds itself, okay, or fosters itself, or furthers itself, or, you know, maintain, you know, any word you can think of. It's all deity in, you know, as many ways as you can imagine, and, you know, 100,000 times more that you can't. You know, So, you know, like you're kind of in the spirit of what you were saying, they want you to just let go of the notion that somehow something is not being held, you know, held or upheld. You know, it's coming at you from every direction in every way you could ever need. You want for nothing from deity. You know, the fundamental quality of deity is unity. So where is it not?
Right. Well, what about
people? Yeah, but you know, the Father is an individual. He's only personally present at the center of the Isle of Paradise. He is not personally present out here. That's a sad thought to have revealed to man, because man has always wanted the Father to be personally present out here. Well, guess what? He's not. The Father has no personal presence out here at all. That's not a personal presence. That's an impersonal presence.
That's the bosom.
See? Like they just said.
What about through the Son?
Yeah, but the Creator's Son has a presence out here, but not the Universal Father. The Universal Father is personally present in the central universe as an absolute person, and he's personally present at the center of the Isle of Paradise as an infinite person, but he's not personally present out here.
He is through the ultimate time.
Right, and it's just you have to have the courage to allow that. That's the Father delegated his delegated personal presence. If he had personal presence out here, guess what? There wouldn't be a you to want his personal presence. There wouldn't be a space for you to be. He can't be personally present out here. Okay? There's no place for you to be personally present. Okay. Isn't it a fortunate coincidence that there is an expression of personalized deity that can be present with you so that you're not alone out here? The Father can't be personally present with you, but the Mother can. Yeah. All right. So, speaking of the Mother... Let's do the biggie.
Okay, six, the local universe creative spirits. Much that pertains to the nature and function of the local universe creative spirits properly belongs to the narrative of their association with the Creator's sons and the organization and management of the local creations. But there are many features of the pre-local universe experiences of these marvelous beings which may be narrated as part of this discussion of the seven supreme spirit groups. We are conversant with six phases of the career of a local universe mother spirit, and we speculate much concerning the probability of a seventh stage of activity. These different stages of existence are: 1. Initial paradise differentiation. When a Creator's Son is personalized by the joint action of the Universal Father and the Eternal Son, simultaneously, there occurs in the presence of the infinite spirit. There occurs in the person of the infinite spirit what is known as the supreme reaction of complement. We do not comprehend the nature of this reaction, but we understand that it designates an inherent modification of those personalizable possibilities which are embraced within the creative potential of the conjoint Creator. The birth of a coordinate Creator's Son signalizes the birth within the person of the infinite spirit of the potential of the future local universe consort of this paradise Son. We are not cognizant of this new pre-personal identification of entity, but we know that this fact finds place on the paradise records of the career of such a Creator's Son.
Okay. Now, the thing that we're going to want to notice as we're going through these stages is how insanely relevant this is to understanding you and what you are. Okay? Okay, so this first stage, initial paradise differentiation, think about what they're describing here. You know, they said things like, pre-personal identification of entity, again, you know, not being entity. You know, they talk about those personalizable possibilities which are embraced within the creative potential of the conjoint creator. You know, all very potential, pre-personal. Okay? And what would we call this? You know, here it's described as the birth, okay, of the potential. Okay. Well, what would we call that more specifically? We would call that the conception. Right? Okay. This is the creative spirit being conceived. This conception is occurring where? In the person of the infinite spirit. Well, wait a minute. The infinite spirit is a non-personal fact. Oh, the infinite mother spirit, the person of the infinite spirit. This is in the womb of the infinite mother spirit. In the womb of the infinite mother spirit, there is a conception. Okay, so this is the conception. Well, now a conception requires two things coming together. You know, here we just mentioned the Creator Son coming into existence. You had two things coming together, the Universal Father and the Eternal Son. You know, a Creator Son is the Father-Son type deity. Father-type deity and Son-type deity together as one, personalized. Two things come together in that conception. Well, here we just have the Infinite Spirit, the Infinite Mother Spirit. So that can't be a conception. Where's the other thing? Oh, we know there's another thing that comes into play, right? It's not just the Spirit-type deity. Eventually, there's going to be Mother-type deity. It's going to be a creative Mother Spirit, okay? You know, it's the Spirit-Mother-type deity personalized. Those are two things. Oh, yeah, remember what I said earlier? Sometimes, normally, you know, we'll see a conception and right there in front of us, there's an egg and a sperm, and they come together right in front of us at that point in time, in that place. Sometimes when you're working this stuff, the two halves of an event are spread out at two different times. Yeah, this is the conception, but the other half of the conception is at the primary eruption from the Trinity. Okay, those two things come together. Well, now actually, I'm talking about a creative spirit here. I'm talking about a spiritual conception. So maybe the more appropriate parallel, rather than thinking of my material conception, maybe I should think of my spiritual conception. Well, how does my spiritual conception work? The two things come together. My soul and the adjuster fuse. That's my spiritual conception. Well, the mother part of that twofold conception fact started up years before the adjuster even arrived, even post-Pentecost. Adjuster didn't arrive until about age 6. The mother part of me got started long before that. You know, not to mention, I don't fuse the moment the adjuster arrives. You know, I fuse until a fifth mansion world. There's going to be a lot of mother phenomenon before that father thing fuses, you know, and I have my spiritual conception point. It's exactly like this. One part is there manifest long before the other part of the conception. But from an eternity point of view, of course, there's no separation of those in time. But when you take that eternity conception and you bring it down into time, the two halves of the conception make their appearance at two different points in time, rather than at one point in time like it did in my material conception. Okay. So you work exactly like this. You're conceived the same way. You're very mother-like, rather than, you know, a father-like fiat.
Or the supreme reaction of complements, so like male and female, we're each complementing.
Okay, now that, we'll get to the reason why they say that here in a little bit, a few stages down the road. The supreme reaction of complement, what's the complementary pair, the Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit? We'll see in a little bit why it's called a supreme reaction of complement. Okay, but one step at a time. Just noticing, this is the conception stage. Okay, and when you think about it, it actually has a lot of parallel to your spiritual conception. Okay, so there's no creative spirit visible. He's totally hidden inside the infinite mother spirit, enwombed in the infinite mother spirit. No being can see this fact in any way, shape, or form. Just notice one other little detail. Is they're foreshadowing. We know the word identification, is about personality engaging a self. So when they say pre-personal identification of entity, they're reminding you, this is not just a self. This is a pre-personal self. There's a potential identity, but of course, from the perspective of the Infinite Mother Spirit, it's not a potential, identity. It's an eternity viewpoint. But see, so you're combining sort of the eternity immediacy of the identification with this slowly manifesting over time self phenomenon. Right, and this is the way they're describing it.
What level is this taking place on? It's not taking place in the finite level, is it? Is it taking place in the absolute level or the absolute level?
Okay, you're literally in the infinite mother spirit.
So that's the absolute.
So,
it's the existential.
It's def. It's mother spirit. That's experiential deity. When you combine. When you add mother deity to the infinite spirit and get the infinite mother spirit, now you have experiential deity. If you get into the details of that experiential deity, what kind of upholder is in play there with the infinite mother spirit? The co-infinite upholder. So if you want to think about what level, this is really, this womb that we're visualizing here is at the co-infinite level.
So it's a borderline between the absolute and the absolute.
No, it's a borderline between the absolute and the infinite. It's in between the above the absolute. So this conception is occurring at a trans-absolute level. Above the level of the aisle, above the level of the absolute spirit, the absolute mind, the volitional absolute, the personality absolute. Okay? It's above that. Okay? And we know it has to, remember, we know that the creative mother spirit is going to have anti-gravity ability. That's a trans-absolute fact. Yeah. She's brought that down from the co-infinite where she was conceived, all the way down to the lowliest of the finite.
Well, men and women are more or less interchangeable. I mean, in that I could marry this woman or I could marry that one. It's a big, confusing decision we have to make. But the creative son and the creative mother spirit
is an arranged marriage. Yes.
There's a precision about
right.
It has to be.
Right. It's a supreme reaction of complement. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's almost like the Genesis story of how Eve came out of the rib of Adam.
Notice how there's a curious parallel. Right. See, just recognize, as you go through this, you're going to recognize all sorts of things that you're familiar with. It's because this is the source of the pattern for your life. And not even just your life, but, you know, even all kinds of experiences with others in your life, like marriage and having children and all kinds of things. Okay, all that has a source. Okay, and you know, it's the fact that we are a child of two parents, not just a spiritual father, but also a cosmic mother, should be very obvious by the time we get done with these stages. It's like, wait a minute, this is describing me, my temporal experience. You know, and the magic fiat guy, the universal father, is not directly involved here in this story. Yeah. You know, so it's not surprising that the mother influence, you know, dominates all the way up through the local universe. And that's the big story about your maturation. All right. You know, there's a parallel to this maturation we're reading about here.
2, preliminary creatorship training. During the long period of the preliminary training of a Michael son in the organization administration of universes, his future consort undergoes further development of entity and becomes group conscious of destiny. We do not know, but we suspect that such a group conscious entity becomes space cognizant and begins that preliminary training requisite to the acquirement of spirit skill in her future work of collaboration with the complemento Michael in universe creation and administration.
Okay, before we get into all the details about her, this is just the parallel to us. Okay, she, the entity, is still in the womb here. Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, stage 2 is still in the womb. Mm. So when we're in the womb, do we have teachable mind? Yes. Because when she was in the womb, she had teachable mind. She's being trained while she's still in the womb, while she's not even a she. She's just an it. Okay? So, is the big thing when we can definitively call ourselves a person? No. I mean, forget about these temporal milestones. Think about yourself from an eternal viewpoint. You begin to exist at conception. Okay? And you begin to grow from that point on. Her training is when she's in the womb. You begin to be trained. You begin to learn when you're still in the womb. Okay. Okay. So now let's think about this training. We passed by this back in this Central Universe paper. You don't have to turn to it. I'll just, because it's just one little sentence I want to read here. Back when they were talking, remember that last section, it was a long section called The Purpose of the Central Universe? And there was one of the element number, or item number 6 in there, was the coordinate ministering daughters. And it says, the universe mother's spirits, co-creators of the local universes, secure their pre-personal training on the worlds of Avona in close association with the spirits of the circuits. Oh, there's another indirect connection. So while she is still in the womb and being trained, who's training that creative spirit, those circuit spirits in Havona? It's like, well, wait a minute, isn't she like on paradise? Well, where exactly is the infinite mother spirit located? where isn't the infinite mother spirit located? Right. Okay. Okay. Where isn't that womb? Okay. So not only is that womb, able to, while she's still in the womb, she can engage the circuit spirits in Havona. Notice what else they're saying here. So this pre-personal entity doesn't have individual consciousness yet, they know, but becomes group conscious of destiny. Such a group conscious entity becomes space cognizant. What are they talking about there? Group consciousness. Now, what's the title of this paper? What's the title of this paper? Seven Supreme Spirit Groups. Okay? One of those groups is the Creative Mother Spirit. That's the group we're talking about here. So, while this entity is still in the womb, it plugs into the collective creative spirit consciousness of all the creative spirits as one. It's like, well, they're all out there in the super universes, aren't they? Yeah, well, where is this womb? Okay. From while it's still in the womb, she can be sort of overlapping all the creative mother spirits out in the super universes too. Begin to synchronize with them as creative spirits, fellow creative spirits. Okay, and there's this group consciousness. Well, they're out in space, you know. So the entity becomes space cognizant through that group consciousness while still in the womb. Yeah. Pretty profound things can happen while you're still in the womb. Maybe the womb is not to be dismissed in the human life.
Didn't there have to be a first creative spirit?
That's born. Another. Yes. There was a firstborn creator son, was there not? They always come in pairs. There's always a what? Supreme reaction of complement. Ooh, there's a mystery I should try to figure out. Where is the firstborn creative spirit? What does it do? Pattern universe paper.
What does group conscious mean specifically?
Well, that's what I'm just saying. I mean, again, we're talking about, you know, when you're just talking about creative spirits, okay, you're talking about impersonal spirit presences, and spirit is a unity substance. I mean, think of it as being just one creative spirit, collective presence.
Right, the group of creative.
The infinite spirit has a downstepped presence as a, you know.
That's what I was thinking.
Right.
It's all the other creative spirits.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to point out. I mean, they're very purposely using the word group because that's the title of the paper. Mm-hmm. The group is the Creative Mother Spirit group, mm-hmm. one of the seven groups. Mm-hmm. Okay. Their group consciousness. Okay, so there's, we're still in the womb, but we're learning in the womb. Now what?
Three, the stage of physical creation. At the time the creatorship charge is administered to a Michael Son by the Eternal Son, the Master Spirit, who directs the super universe to which this new Creator Son is destined, gives expression to the prayer of identification in the presence of the infinite spirit. And for the first time, the entity of the subsequent creative spirit appears as differentiated from the person of the infinite spirit. And proceeding directly to the person of the petitioning master spirit, this entity is immediately lost to our recognition, become apparently a part of the person of this master spirit. The newly identified creative spirit remains with the master spirit until the moment of the departure of the creator son for the adventure of space, whereupon the master spirit commits the new spirit consort to the keeping of the creator son, at the same time administering to the spirit consort the charge of eternal fidelity and unending loyalty. And then occurs one of the most profoundly touching episodes which ever takes place on paradise. The Universal Father speaks in acknowledgement of the eternal union of the Creator Son and the Creative Spirit and in confirmation of the bestowal of certain joint powers of administration by the Master Spirit of Super Universe jurisdiction. The Father united, Creator Son and Creative Spirit, then go forth on their adventure of universe creation. And they work together in this form of association throughout the long and arduous period of the material organization of their universe.
Okay, so just... And that should be, right, I mean, that should sound pretty familiar. And look at, you know, here's the ideal that humans have always wanted to try to establish by fiat. What the Father has joined together, is anyone going to put us under?
No.
Right. Arranged marriage and all. But Father united, Creator Son and Creative Spirit. Okay, so there's that part. Some of the parallels should be, if they're not obvious, there's no hope for you. What did we just talk? We just described the birth there. Okay, so let's think about that in some details. Now, remember how they described the conception back in number one? That there was an inherent modification of those personalizable possibilities, okay, which are embraced within the creative potential of the conjoined creator. So within the infinite mother's spirit, this portion of her, it was modified, became separate. Okay, that's conception. At conception, you become a separate fact, but not independent, still very, dependent in the womb. At birth, now independent. So separation of conception there that they described. Now we have the independence of birth. And notice something that's amazingly similar to an a seemingly insignificant human phenomenon. The moment this child is born, the moment it's born, it's wrapped in swaddling clothes. What are the swaddling clothes? The Master Spirit envelops it. The Master Spirit is a swaddling cloth. See, so where does the instinct come from in a mother to wrap her child in swaddling clothes the moment the child is born? From that fact. Okay? There isn't anything that doesn't have a source on high. Okay? Even something as seemingly arbitrary as swaddling clothes. Okay? And I think Terry, when you recognize that's the pattern here. Okay, so the child is wrapped in swaddling clothes. Okay, and the moment that you take the swaddling clothes off, they're married. Now that's robbing the cradle. But think about that. I mean, remember what's going on. Only to the Creator Son is this a person. For everyone else, it's this pre-personal entity. Yeah, it's really, it looks like robbing the cradle to everyone else. You're marrying a baby. They're not even matured into a person yet. Okay? So from a finite perspective, it's very confusing. You really need the top-down eternity perspective to understand this. In the supremacy of their complementary nature, of course, they don't have this temporal differential. But if you look at it temporally, it's all very confusing. You've got something happening like, shouldn't that happen way down the road? Why is that? You have marriage happen. The sequence is hard to understand when you're dealing with these mother-like totality attitude expressions. They don't occur in simple father-like sequences where fully matured, then married, for instance. Okay? So really reflecting on the nature of this phenomenon should help you to kind of start to let go of time a bit. That's one of the things that you need to do, is to see if you can begin to see this without the crutch of time. Can you begin to see it from a more eternity perspective, where it doesn't matter what time it is. Think about it, read the whole thing, and then think about it all as one fact without the time. Okay? Because that's the truth of it. So you're trying, it'll help you to go beyond the fact to get into the truth more. The truth of it comes from the co-infinite level. It's way beyond time. Okay? It comes from above the absolute of time. Okay? I mean, in order to really begin to understand these things, you've got to let go of time.
We are so clock-oriented now in this stage of evolution that even starting this group, you know, you're clock-oriented. Katie's clock-oriented. I'm clock-oriented.
I'm sometimes. I try to be clock.
Right. But so just think about that a little bit, you know. Place and direction. We're trying to understand a creative mother spirit, you know. Yeah. The pattern of place, okay? Not the pattern of direction.
Yeah.
And the clock, that ticks off, you know, marks on a direction, a sequence, okay? Sanghic consciousness is going to be very place-like, not clock-like, okay? You bring in some Adamic uplift, and the clock is going to come into existence. I mean, in the age of Adam and Eve on a world, you know, that's the scientific age. You can have a scientific age without a clock.
Right.
Okay. All right. See, so you do need to understand direction and the clock, but it's not the whole story.
Right.
It's not just the father.
Right.
There's also the mother. Is also just being present. And certainly when you're just going to try to understand a very high source-like mother fact like this, as a pure sequence, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, it's going to be a little confusing. It's not going to tick off in completely rational clock-like fashion.
Wasn't that happening with Jesus toward the end of his public ministry, where he just, things were just, he was starting to manifest supremacy at a higher and higher rate, to the point that things just weren't sequential sometimes.
That is, I mean, you know, just recognize the more he, you know, he might manifest the fact that he has supreme type deity, you know, as a master son.
See,
you're right. You can have that.
Tied in for Don, so he understands. What I'm thinking of is that we have this potential. I'm not saying that any of us are going to do it, but there is potential when you start to, resonate with that consciousness. You're carrying around that consciousness of this deity cloud.
Just the more you recognize that there is both the mother and the father, and these things are always playing off of each other, we all know that the less Andite religionists and more Eastern religionists, you know, have always had more of a tendency to be drifting towards the recognition of the mother, you know, the supreme. Why not? Okay. So, all right. Oh, there's something back here?
I did have one question. Do you think we'll have more of a pattern like that, where there's an instantaneous decision about an arranged marriage as we evolve, so there would be less confusion?
See, again, I mean, what do they tell you about human marriages? Are they divine? Now, see, I mean, again, it's just like, you know, saying, well, I've just read what the life and teachings of Jesus. Now, the only question in my head is, what would Jesus do? Well, that's a problematic question. Okay, you know, again, it's not you don't want to say, well, I'm going to do whatever the Creator Son and the Creator Mother Spirit did. Well, they're both creator beings. There may be a lot of things that are not appropriate for you to try to apply to a creature. Okay? And one of those is thinking of marriages in too lofty a fashion. Okay? There is a divine source for marriage, but it's not directly, you know, expressed. It's downstepped, okay, to a human phenomenon. It's not a divine institution. Right. The flavor is, you know, if a man, when a man and woman come together, if they look up for the source of what's going to truly bring them together and hold them together, you know, then there's the potential for the super additive consequence mm-hmm. of that relationship.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, look up to this source, mm-hmm. but don't think that somehow you're up there. It's a faith graph. You're reaching up. You know, so federate yourselves together. Don't confederate. Don't think that you're up there at that unity level. Okay, you're just being inspired by that. That's, you know, that's not something that can be directly applied. All right. Let's see. What else did we have in there?
Let's do the first few sentences. That's really interesting.
Let's see. So. I just got my mind fact focus in. So there's a number of things in there. The prayer of identification. Okay, so again, there's this foreshadowing of that personality identification event. And prayer. Remember those simple little definitions of the contrast between true prayer and true worship? True prayer, one of the descriptions is, someone remember, self-reminding. Self-reminding. All we have here is a self. We don't have a person yet. Okay? So there's an appropriateness to describing that way. This master spirit, looking to and engaging that self in the same way that, you know, from my personal self, my personalized self in the temple, you know, can be self-reminding, you know, gently looking down to that self. You know, here is the master spirit gently looking down to this child self, okay, and wrapping its swaddling clothes around it, okay? So that's why they use that expression. What else is in there? We mentioned all the bit about that. Certainly when you get into the obvious marriage parts there, you're pointing out, Terry, I mean, there's some definite ideals to look to there. Eternal fidelity and unending loyalty. I mean, those facts in a human marriage transcend marriage itself. You can use that marriage as an indispensable initial environment in which to consecrate yourself to eternal fidelity. Because you're not going to make it to eternity if you don't consecrate yourself to eternal fidelity. If you don't, you know, that eventually you're going to end up in iniquity. Okay, if you don't consecrate to eternal fidelity. Okay, and unending loyalty. Look at the ideals that are literal in a Creator Son and Creator Mother Spirit, translate those ideals down to ideas in the human experience. All right, so let's get the rest of the conception here in play.
4, the life creation error. Upon the declaration of intention to create life by the Creator's Son, there ensue on paradise the personalization ceremonies participated in by the 7 master spirits and personally experienced by the supervising master spirit. This is a paradise deity contribution to the individuality of the spirit consort of the Creator Son, and becomes manifest to the universe in the phenomenon of the primary eruption in the person of the Infinite Spirit. Simultaneously with this phenomenon on paradise, the heretofore impersonal spirit consort of the Creator Son becomes, to all practical intents and purposes, a bona fide person. Henceforth and forevermore, this same local universe mother spirit will be regarded as a person and will maintain personal relations with all the personality hosts of the ensuing life creation.
Okay, so, you know, we already just talked about, okay, so here's the, you know, the other part of that, the conception. Coming from the Trinity, you know, this is a paradise deity contribution. You know, they don't tell you directly here, remember it's up in 34 that they point out the Trinity. But notice what they emphasize here. Remember how I said one of the important things that's going on with all these supreme spirits is this very fundamental, foundational connection between the third source and center as the infinite spirit, not the conjoint actor, but as the infinite spirit, that impersonal expression, the face of the third source and center, that fundamental linkage between the infinite spirit and the Paradise Trinity. So the Paradise Trinity is the source, okay, but how does it get, you know, beamed out? How does it get expressed? Through the infinite spirit. Because of this fundamental linkage, whenever the Paradise Trinity is doing something, or whenever the infinite spirit, just as the infinite spirit is doing something, there's always this linkage, and sometimes it's a very direct relationship where you see them working hand in hand like this. Sometimes it's sort of behind the scenes, but it's always in play, this fundamental linkage. Okay, so from the Paradise Trinity, out through the infinite spirit, because, of course, the infinite spirit is the one that's directly connected to the creative spirit and can get it there, okay, comes this mother deity. And so now you have a creative mother spirit. And we see this phenomenon that's been coming down more and more from that co-infinite level now is a full-blown personal fact in the finite. You know, if you think about it just in finite terms, it's like there was just an impersonal thing here, and then from the magic reservoir of the Father, boink, now there's personality bestowed. But that's kind of a simplistic way to think about it, that Father-like view of it. I mean, really, you have a creative mother spirit that's coming down from the co-infinite level as a full creative mother spirit person and finally manifesting, you know, in down in finite space and time, okay? And the interesting thing you see when you take that eternal source point, bring it down in time, it doesn't come all down into the finite all at once. An impersonal part comes first, and then, you know, the rest of it comes second, okay? That's just what happens when you take that eternity fact and you lay it out in space and time. It ends up, part of the story happens in one place, part of the story happens in another place, you know, and et cetera. Okay. all right. Let's see, is there anything else in there? Remember, for lower beings, though, you still wouldn't know her as a person. We need a little bit more focusing down yet to occur before, if you imagine just, you know, 4,000 years ago being taken on a journey to Salvington, you wouldn't have really had a personal experience with the Creative Mother Spirit. But now, you know, post-Pentecost, okay, now you will. So let's You know, let's get the rest of that story here.
5. The false bestowal ages. Another and great change occurs in the never-ending career of a creative spirit. When the Creator's Son returns to Universe Headquarters after the completion of his 7th bestowal and subsequent to his acquirement of full universe sovereignty. On that occasion, before the assembled administrators of the universe, the triumphant Creator's Son elevates the Universe Mother Spirit to co-sovereignty and acknowledges the Spirit Consort as his equal.
Okay, so two things that sort of not immediately spoken to that I was just referring to. Remember, there's an even further condensation of definitive personality expression in the finite that occurs at this point. So she's very definitively finite. So in other words, all that personal character that was completely hidden in the beginning, you know, is now all the way down. So what was all the way, started all the way at the top, has come all the way down in a very definitive fashion. On the other hand, the Creator's Son has reached all the way up to supremacy, literally now has supreme type deity within him. So you have from the top fully down, the bottom fully up, supreme complements, they're equal now. Okay? She's gotten all the way down, he's gotten all the way up, now they're equal. It's not now, somehow only one. I mean, it's a complementary thing.
How were they unequal before?
She had something he didn't have. She was higher than he was. And he had something she didn't have. He was lower than she was.
And so it is.
Now she's as low as he is, and he's as high as she is. And they're equal, you know, in the finite. You know, we're just thinking about the finite here.
Okay. Remember, just the finite.
You know, how we think about the other stuff is, you know, who knows. But, you know, that's why they very purposely said, you know, the way they did there. They called it the supreme reaction of complement. They're suggesting, just try to understand it, you know, from the bottom to the top of the finite. Just figure out that part. Don't worry about the rest of it right now. Okay. Okay, so that's that. Now what else do we have?
6, the ages of light and life. Upon the establishment of the era of light and life, the local universe co-sovereign enters upon the 6th phase of a creative spirit's career. But we may not portray the nature of this great experience. Such things pertain to a future stage of evolution in Nebadon.
Oh yeah, and I just remember before I describe that, remember the other thing that's a parallel, you know, when you talk about the personalization ceremonies. So there's this entity has been in existence for this extremely long time until there's a personalization ceremony. Okay, you must be the same way. Okay, you're conceived, all the time in the womb, you're born, there's a, you know, almost 6 years. Finally, the 7th adjutant makes contact, you're encircled in the Holy Spirit, and finally, personality can identify and manifest. You're a volitional being, okay? That's your personalization ceremony, okay? You were pre-personal before roughly age 6, just like she was pre-personal until this personalization ceremony, okay? And again, it's not like that personality wasn't in existence. It comes from the Father. He has no relationship time and space. He individuated it in eternity. Mm-hmm. So before, during, and after time, I mean, independent of time, okay? Same way, I mean, you know, when you truly understand her, it's really to recognize there's always been a person. It just finally manifested as a volitional phenomenon in the finite. Yeah? Okay? We're the same way. Okay. We're pre-personal, then we're definitively personal. Okay. Now this whole bit of this evolution that she's undergoing, there's a 6th stage here. But we may not portray the nature of this great experience. Well, but let's talk about it a little bit anyway. Because we can figure it out and talk about it. Okay. If you remember, in the paper on the spheres of light and life, the latter sections of that paper, they go through these the stages of the collective, you know, first the local system settled in light and life, then the constellation, and then the local universe. That fourth stage, when the local universe is settled in light and life, it says, the local universe mother spirit experiences new liaison relations with the master spirit of the super universe. Okay, and that's where we are here, right? You know, the local universe being settled in light and life is our stage six here. Okay? So at this point, she experiences new liaison relationships with he, with the master spirit. Okay? Oh, that's on page 634 in section 10 there. For the longest time, ever since the primary eruption, she's been spirit-mind womb. She's been both a mindal and a spiritual womb. Okay, but the local universe has been moving up. And that mindal womb has now gotten up to the level of the mindal womb of the super universe, the mindal womb of the reflective mother spirits. And in a lot of ways, she doesn't so much need to be also the mindal womb anymore. But she still needs to be the spiritual womb. Well, in the super universe, remember how they're separate? The creative mother spirits are the mindal womb, and the master spirit is the spiritual womb? She's finding a new synchronization with him as the spirit, just the spiritual womb, not the mother mindal womb. She's moving one step closer to he. When the grand universe is settled in light and life, she has to let go of she. She's going to coalesce down to a he-like point so she can take hands with the Creator Son. She's starting to take that next step of engaging a he and beginning, you know, that's part of her further coalescence. Once the grand universe is settled in light and life, we're all birthed out of the womb of the universal mother. God the Supreme is God the Mother, including her. And when she's birthed out of the womb of the universal mother, she ceases to be a she and becomes a he. The she's of the absentite, or a more transcendent fact, will all be in some higher expression of God the Mother then, including her, in the same way that all the females in this room will soon leave behind being a womb and be ascending sons. She eventually leaves behind being a womb and becomes an ascending son in a higher mother presence. Okay.
And what do the males leave behind in order to become an ascending son?
A man has to do. I mean, a man starts out with a bias on the father's side of the picture. So he's got to pick up a lot of the mother stuff. Between here and the Isle of Paradise. The woman starts out with a good little bit of the mother side of the equation. She's got to pick up the father side. The way this works is, think of the literal manifestation of mother likeness, of a literal totality attitude of womb. Is a limited phenomenon because eventually that all becomes what's within. In the absentite, everything that of the finite that now is a without will be a within. There will be no finite extent. All of the without of the finite will be bottled up inside of all the beings. That extent, or any mother-like presence, you know, through it, will be eventuated within. Okay. So, as a male, I've got to give up being just a point. I've got to let go of just being a father-like point. I've got to engage the whole, because eventually I've got to bring that whole within. A female has an initial relationship to the whole. It's already within her to a degree. She's got to get herself also a point-like, you know, engaged to the point-like, like the Creative Mother Spirit is doing. She doesn't know much of anything about being a point-like fact to begin with. Yeah. And she's starting to really go to school on that now with the Master Spirit, this new liaison, learning how, and what is it, being a he-like, a point-like fact? What that means is the ability to wrap your arms around and encompass and bring it within. You know, it's without, because initially you don't have arms to reach around it. As soon as you have arms to reach around it, then it's within. And now, to everyone on the outside, you know, you're a he-like fact. But hidden within you, you know, is the total finite. Like, think about the Supreme Being. Hidden within the Supreme Being is the full extent of the total finite, the universal mother. Full ubiquitous presence is hidden within the Supreme Being. You know, he looks like he's just a being standing here in front of you, you know, and you can draw a box around. But inside is the total finite extent. Yeah, an amazing distillation is within that being. Okay, the last little bit.
7, the unrevealed career. We know of these 6 phases of the career of a local universe mother spirit. It is inevitable that we should ask, is there a 7th career? We are mindful that when finaliters attain what appears to be their final destiny of mortal ascension, they are of record as entering upon the career of 6th stage spirits. We conjecture that there awaits the finaliters still another an unrevealed career in universe assignment. It is only to be expected that we would likewise regard the universe mother spirits as having ahead of them some undisclosed career, which will constitute their 7th phase of personal experience in universe service and loyal cooperation with the order of the Creator Michaels.
And we just described that. That's the basics of what's going to happen. Just as we'll be birthed out of the womb, so will she. As sons within a greater mother. This last little bit, it isn't as long as it looks like. It's really an epilogue that needs to be pretty much just read. Would you like to do it, Jeanette? Would you like to just... and we can finish this up. Because this section 8... I mean, obviously, section 7 is just a little aside. Section 8 is just kind of gives us the grand overview to wrap it up.
7, the adjutant mind spirits. These adjutant spirits are the sevenfold mind bestowal of a local universe mother spirit upon the living creatures of the conjoint creation of a creator son and such a creative spirit. This bestowal becomes possible at the time of the spirit's elevation to the status of personality prerogatives. The narration of the nature and functioning of the 7th adjutant mind spirits belongs more appropriately to the story of your local universe of Nebadon.
But just in this context, think about how this works. So, you know, we often talk about the adjutants, you know, this ubiquitous presence that we're plugged into. They're her mind. But not solely hers. She's sharing right now. But this process we just read, she's working on wrapping her personality bubble around that. When she does, that mind is all within her. I can't use it anymore. Okay? But because she doesn't have her personality arms around it, it's without and it can be shared. Okay? So that's how this, you know, is important to have this here to remind you. The reason that there is the adjutant mind spirits is because she hasn't gotten her, she hasn't encompassed them yet. She's still in that personality evolution of encompassing them. Well, conveniently, because she hasn't encompassed them yet, we can use them. But as soon as she encompasses them, then they're just hers. And she's really a he then, you know. Like the supreme being is the supreme mind. That's all inside of that person. There's a personality that's encompassing that mind. That is not mine to use anymore in any way. It's his. Okay, so that's how that fits in. See, and that it's all part of this very complex manifestation of supreme spirits, where part of her is that. You know, and it's so separated that you tend to even think of it as seven different entities, you know, they aren't actually. But, you know, again, it's in space and in time, stuff is all, it's not all co-located until the end, when personality can finally encompass it and co-locate it. All right.
Eight, functions of the supreme spirits. The seven groups of supreme spirits constitute the nucleus of the functional family of the third source and center, both as the infinite spirit and as the conjoint actor. The domain of the supreme spirits extends from the presence of the Trinity on paradise to the functioning of mind of the evolutionary mortal order on the planets of space. Thus do they unify the descending administrative levels and coordinate the manifold functions of the personnel thereof. Whether it is a reflective spirit group in liaison with the Ancients of Days, a creative spirit acting in concert with a Michael Sun, or the seven master spirits encircled around the Paradise Trinity, the activity of the supreme spirits is encountered everywhere in the central, super, and local universes. They function alike with the Trinity personalities of the order of days and with the paradise personalities of the order of suns.
Okay. I just want to emphasize the beginning there. Notice how they're describing that. Okay, so both the infinite spirit and the paradise Trinity, so you're being mentioned again, reminding you of this very fundamental linkage. It also has, you know, some little sidelights. Notice how definitively they state here something that I keep stressing. The third source and center, both as the infinite spirit and as the conjoint actor. The, you know, those are two separate designations. The first, impersonal. The second, personal. You know, so the third source and center, both impersonally and personally. Would be another way to say that. Okay. And you may even remember that they even used the conjoint creator term, you know, for the third source and center when you wanted to really stress the third source and center doing a creation act. You know, not just being impersonal or being personal, but creating. So they're very, sort of full spectrum, you know, in the use of the third source and center terms in these sections here. The other thing, notice how they describe the supreme spirits. It goes all the way down to the adjutants, but where does it start? What's the top? The domain of the supreme spirits extends from what? The presence of the Trinity. Now, again, reminding you, like I said, I mean, that, yes, the infinite spirit is an existential seed in this whole process. Okay. But when all is said and done, you're really talking about what comes from the Paradise Trinity. That's the real difference about this discussion. What stems from that side of the original? You know, it doesn't say, from the presence of the Father or the first center, to be even more precise. It's that what comes from the other side of the Trinity, or the other side of the original, from the Trinity side, what comes from there down? And what comes from that side down is much more complicated than anything than any human has ever tried to think about. And part of the reason is that's never been revealed before. Only what comes down from the other side, from the first center side, has been revealed in the first four epical revelations. The fifth reveals both sides, more about what comes from the first center, and for the first time, what comes from the other side of the original. And when you go through all this, it's like, wow, I can understand why the Planetary Prince's staff didn't try to teach this. This is incredibly complicated. Okay? I'm having to really rack my brain to even figure, you know, follow this. Okay, this is advanced stuff to think about what comes from the Trinity side. It's very sophisticated. you have to so let go of any sort of an anthropomorphic crutch. You have to kind of let go of temporal crutches even. Okay, you have to take on a totality attitude, which a lowly little animal origin point-like being like me is not an immediate inclined to do. It's just not my immediate nature. But I can challenge myself to go beyond that little point, that little cork bobbing in the ocean.
You've got a totally individual attitude.
Yeah. So that's, see, it's important to spend some time really trying to get the truth of this flowing through you so that you can get into the truth of what's truly new in the fifth epical revelation. Yeah. This is indeed new. This is, this is so new. And it should be so exciting when you start to see that how new and original this is. It's like, well, what would happen if humans thought about this stuff? You know, if they went for centuries with this in their minds. You know, we've gone for millennia with father ideas in our minds. What if we started to bring the rest of the story in? What would happen to humanity? What if we had more of a totality attitude? I bet we might even eventually get to the brotherhood of man. A totality attitude. Okay.
Together with their infinite mother spirit, the supreme spirit groups are the immediate creators of the vast creature family of the third source and center. All orders of the ministering spirits spring from this association. Primary supernifim originate in the infinite spirit. Secondary beings of this order are created by the master spirits. Tertiary supernifim by the seven spirits of the circuits. The reflective spirits collectively are the mother makers of a marvelous order of the angelic hosts, the mighty seconifim of the super universe services. A creative spirit is the mother of the angelic orders of a local creation. Such seraphic ministers are original in each local universe, though they are fashioned after the patterns of the central universe. All these creators of ministering spirits are only indirectly assisted by the central lodgment of the infinite spirit, the original and eternal mother of all the angelic ministers.
Okay. So notice how they're stressing that independence that came up in our conversation about the circuit spirits and the tertiary seconifim, or supernifim, excuse me, tertiary supernifim. And just, I forgot to mention that when we were talking about the tertiary supernifim. you are going to have a lot of interaction with those offspring of the circuit spirits when you're in Avona too. Don't forget that. Besides the circuit spirits directly, you're going to have a lot of interaction with the tertiary supernafim also. All this time we've been reading, and we see infinite spirit, I keep saying, okay, yeah, technically, what are we talking about here? The infinite mother spirit. It's like, well, how do you know that, Chris? Well, what does it say? How does this first sentence start out? Together with their infinite mother spirit, okay? That's the mother fact that's on top of all this complex mother and quasi-mother phenomenon that's coming down from the Trinity. In the beginning, there was the infinite mother spirit. That's the other side of the story. Instead of in the beginning, was the Father. In the beginning was the infinite mother spirit, and many things came down from that beginning. And notice, we talked about the reflective spirits. They're helping you again. The reflective spirits collectively are the mother makers. Oh, yeah, so when I'm talking about them, I call them the reflective mother spirits. Okay. Collectively, remember we talked about that. Each super universe has 7 reflective spirits. Okay, there's 7 distinct spirits, but 1 mother. Okay. Again, that when Sakanafim are created, they're created by that one mother, not by the 7 spirits. And yet they're one and the same. Wow, that's a lot more complicated to think about than father-like facts, isn't it? See, that's, again, the point. When you say reflective mother spirits, you're really talking, you're putting an S on the end there, but it's really one fact that you're talking about, the one mother. If you say reflective spirits, perhaps you're wanting to actually think a little less about the mother part and focus on the separate spirit facts for the 7 different schemes. Okay? Just kind of keep that in mind. Okay, so yeah, it's all definitively about the mother, and in the beginning was the infinite mother spirit. When they're downstep, they're at a given level. So all these creators of ministering spirits are only indirectly assisted by the central lodgment of the infinite spirit. You want to really think of the mother in this hierarchical fashion, and what needs to be at that level came down and is there. And a lot of times there doesn't need to be a kind of an intimate back and forth up and down the ladder going on. When a master physical controller needs to manifest co-infinite nature to overrule some of the Isle of Paradise's gravity, he doesn't have to be a conduit coming down. That's been brought down and is right there. Okay, so that's the kind of thing that they're pointing out there. That's another thing that's a little bit different about, what's needed is within, with mother-type deity. It doesn't have to come in from without like father-like phenomena work. All right, then the last little bit here.
The 7 supreme spirit groups are the coordinators of the inhabited creation. The association of their directing heads, the 7 master spirits, appears to coordinate the far-flung activities of God the sevenfold. 1, collectively, the master spirits near equivalent to the divinity level of the Trinity of Paradise deities.
Before you just read the rest of them out, I want to focus on that one thing, point number 1, just to stress it again. Collectively, the master spirits. What do we call that collective fact, that 8th fact? The sevenfold spirit. Not the sevenfold, but the sevenfold spirit. And notice, this is in the context of talking about the far-flung activities of God the sevenfold. So just, to say it, puts the two in a lot more intimate association. The sevenfold spirit near equivalates to the divinity level of the Trinity, like we've pointed out. See, it's a, You have the three paradise deities and the paradise trinity. You have the seven master spirits and the sevenfold spirit. And that paradise trinity and the sevenfold spirit are going to have a lot of similarity. In some sense, you can think of the sevenfold spirit as being a downstepped expression of the paradise trinity directly. Okay.
Individually, they exhaust the primary associable possibilities of triune deity. Three, as diversified representatives of the conjoined actor, they are the repositories of that spirit, mind, power, sovereignty of the Supreme Being, which he does not yet personally exercise. Four, through the reflective spirits, they synchronize the super-universe governments of the Ancients of Days with Magistan, the paradise center of universal reflectivity. Five, in their participation in the individualization of the local universe divine ministers, the master spirits contribute to the last level of God the Sevenfold, the creator-son-creative-spirit union of the local universes. Functional unity inherent in the conjoined actor is disclosed to the evolving universes in the seven master spirits, his primary personalities. But in the perfected super universes of the future, this unity will undoubtedly be inseparable from the experiential sovereignty of the Supreme, presented by a divine counselor of Uversa.
And as you're reading that, I just remember there was one little footnote from last week. You asked me about the root of the word reflect, you know, reflection. When I looked it up, it's like, oh, duh. Okay, why didn't I think of that at the moment? The root is like flexion, you know, or inflection, which means to bend. You know, so it literally means to bend back, you know, is to reflect. You know, so like a ray of light being bent back as it bounces off a mirror. Okay, and you know, and literally thinking of it not as a ball bouncing off, but a ray so that it can bend. Okay, so you know, it invokes that literal sense of a line reaching somewhere and resonating and bending back. Okay. You know, and there's a continuity. I mean, you think of it as a line that bends like that. See, so that your connection to the cosmos, your reflective connection, is just that. It's not, you know, bouncing a super ball off of the cosmos. Okay, you know, it's a contiguous, you know, line that is reaching up and feeding through and coming back and bringing the cosmos back to you. Okay, so, yeah, so flexion. Yep.
When we see with material light, mm-hmm. it's the light strikes something and reflects mm-hmm. to our eyes. They don't. That light doesn't originate in our eyes.
No.
Well, in this, reflecting on the cosmos, is it a similar thing, or are we actually projecting something that comes back?
You know, rather than, you know, it would be a fun thing, hold that thought and go and look at, right before they introduce the three intuitions, look at those the sentences right before and how they're getting you to, you know, think about the reality response, you know, and whether what's responding to what. Just a little, you know, you hold that thought and think about the what they're describing there. That's what they're trying to get you to think about in those sentences right before the three little separate paragraphs that introduce the intuitions, is that thought. all right, so we did it. There's the Supreme Spirits, and then we have another little group of two papers next about the Trinity origin beings. So we're sticking on the theme. You can see why these four papers are grouped together. It really is Trinity-related things. Then we'll get to the more father-like beings, the sons. you know, remember how they alluded to that? They talked about the days beings and the suns. See,
yeah.
You know, another way of saying that, there's the Trinity origin stuff, and then there's the more Father origin. Yeah, but we're continuing on the theme. We're going to work on the Trinity origin being, so we'll start on that next time. Let's take a moment here.